All right, so it is now time for me to introduce our closing speaker. It's my pleasure to introduce a very good friend of mine. Tracy and I have known each other for many years, so I'm just so joyed that you are here with us this morning to be our closing speaker. So, Tracy.
Okay, so, first of all, thank you, Tony, and the birthday party committee for inviting me to be here today. I will say that one of the touchstones of my recovery, and I'll get into that very soon, is that I've been willing to do what I needed to do. Not necessarily immediately, not necessarily with grace, but I have been willing. And so when Tony called and said, would you be the speaker for Sunday, I said, absolutely. And I told my sister, who's in town, I'll just need a little bit of a break and I'll be back. And I'm so, so blessed to be here. So I'm Tracy. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. And I've been abstinent on November 3rd. It was 27 years. And really, what can you say about 27 years, even in 30 or 40 minutes? When I came in, I was 27. And from 17 to 27 had been constant insanity in my head, frequently outside of my body, by me being the actor. And the theme was food, weight, body, food, weight, body, food, weight, body, food, weight, body, food, weight, body. That was the theme of every single second of every single waking moment of my life from 17 to 27. Once I got here, I realized that that theme had actually been there a lot earlier, but I just didn't know. And there's so many things that have allowed me to go from that constant, truly, truly lost individual. Even though I will say, like many of you, I looked pretty good on the outside, but don't scratch the surface, because there wasn't much there. I didn't know that either. So all of the things that I have been willing to do since I got here have allowed me to, you know, stand here basically the same size that I've been for 20-ish years. You know, there's like a 10-pound, 5-up, 5-down, whatever. I always want to be 10 pounds less than whatever I am. And that's part of that crazy that I just ignore. And I've gotten to be truly happy, joyous, and free as a result of working a program and a result of people like you, whether you're people that I've known since I walked in the door or you're people that I've just met right now. Because if there weren't people like you here, there would have been no place for me to come. In thinking about the spirituality of this program, it was really difficult for me to kind of pull apart all of the tools and all of the steps to my own journey to knowing a spirituality greater than I could have ever imagined. And for me, the best example of that is that for the most part, I live happily and comfortably in my own skin. I didn't do that for the first 27 years of my life. Like I said, it looked pretty good. Sometimes it looked really good if you looked at over here where I was kind of doing the juggling of the plates. And if you looked over there where I was like putting everything in the closet, or you tried to get in the closet, which had been locked in, like 54 padlocks and 97 keys, it was kind of like a black hole. And for me, food and a bunch of other compulsive type of behaviors kept me going until I could get here. And I heard somebody earlier talk about hoping that the bottom didn't have to be any worse. And I remember my first sponsor, who I chose because she talked about judging a woman in the elevator whose shoes and purse didn't match. And I'm like, oh, I relate to that. Will you be my sponsor? Because, you know, I had this, as much as I hated myself, I acted that out on the world. And even though I didn't always say it out loud, sometimes I did, it was always going on in my head. And so that food, weight, body, food, weight, body, food, weight, body thing was also judge, criticize, judge, judge, criticize, judge, judge, criticize, judge. Both, you know, backwards and forwards. So Carol told me, the bottom is when you stop digging. And if you are willing to do some simple, not easy things, then you don't have to live the way you've been living anymore. And you don't have to feel the way you do about yourself anymore. It doesn't get better necessarily incrementally, but it gets better in a strange way, and over time, your life can become something that you couldn't even have imagined. And for me, that's the truth. That's what has kept me here all those years. For me, spirituality and God is something that I really can't say I understand. And a lot of times I say God is, I do not understand God. I don't have a particular deity or religion that fits in my heart. But I do know that there is a miraculous energy that is inclusive of all of us and in me and way bigger than me that I get to be a part of if I do some simple, not easy things like work the steps, use the tools. So my prayer most often is action equals willingness. I can talk a lot and I can talk a good game. And I'm kind of smart, I guess. And so the things that I think up in my head sound very good to me. How do I know that I'm willing is when I'm taking an action. Now, the action might be do nothing, which is also quite difficult sometimes. But all of the tools here have been necessary, every single one of them. I'll start with some of the basic tenets of the program, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. So for me, the willingness is action. How do I know I'm willing? When I'm taking an action. The smallest possible action may be the one I take. I heard somebody the other day say, you know, we're kind of funny people, those of us in these rooms. If we say I'm going to do X and we don't make it, we double that for the next day. How about having it so that we could actually do it? And Carol, my first sponsor, said, you pick an abstinence, because this was back in the day, we didn't have abstinence and food plan. You pick an abstinence that you know you can do that is something more than you've been doing. And so I picked my abstinence, which was no bulimia in any form and no anorexia in any form, including some of the ones I hadn't heard about until I got here. I've always wished I could have a colonic, but I haven't had one. It just sounds interesting. In any case, I digress. That abstinence I have been able to do perfectly since I made that decision. Prior to that, there were a few months when I was trying to do a very strict food plan kind of abstinence. And for me, and I know that everybody here is unique and different, which is one of the things I love about OA is that we all get to find, with our higher powers' help and our sponsors' help and people here in the room's help, what is our path. And I need to say that my path, if you don't like any of it, please talk to somebody else, because there's like probably 150 paths right here in the room. So I was able to do that perfectly only after trying for about 4 months to do something else that I had heard about here that worked for some people, that required me to be a perfect human being in relationship to what I put on my plate and in my mouth. And for me, one extra green bean was not going to be the reason I didn't come back. So I had to work with my sponsor and find something that would work for me. I can also say that over these years, I've had various food plans for health reasons, because my head was going off and into funny little food, you know, thinking. Generally, I follow what I call the 90-10 plan. 90% of the time, I don't eat sugar. I am very moderate with grains. And I keep away from foods that I can't have one serving of. And I try to pay attention to what one serving actually is. I look it up. And if one serving sounds like, no way, then I try to not have those foods. And 90% of the time, that is really exactly how I eat. And pretty much 3 meals a day, and sometimes a snack. 10% of the time, it's different. And that has allowed me to be consistently involved in my recovery without feeling like I'm wearing a straitjacket. And I do know that if I choose on those 10% times to eat certain things, that I'm going to have a week of cravings, and I have to choose that I'm going to manage that and deal with it by making more calls, by going to more meetings or whatever. A lot of times I might say, well, it's not really worth it. I don't want to do all that. So I choose not to. But sometimes I choose to. And so for me, that has been freedom. The willingness to be of service has also been really critical in my spiritual growth. I couldn't wait till I got 6 months of abstinence so that I could be a delegate. I was so, so excited to be able to participate. And I feel very glad that my genetics and my personality were the kind of person that was always wanting to join in and belong. Because I felt so terribly separate and alone inside, that promoted me participating to kind of soothe that part of myself. And I don't think I knew that for a few years when I came here, but starting to work the steps with Carol, going to lots of meetings, and being of service really helped me continue that willingness train so that I could stay here. Honesty, I will say, even before willingness, honesty was my first challenge. And I think that because I knew, you know, when they read in chapter 5 about there are those who are constitutionally incapable, the first honest thought I think I had when I came here was that that was me. I might tell the truth about some stuff, especially if I thought you would know if I was lying. But really, I grew up in a household where the insides and outsides did not match. And so I grew up with this duplicity that I didn't think about it. I was a kid, right? This was just normal. We, like, do this on the outside, and then on the inside, it's something else completely. And so I was pretty terrified, and I learned how to make things look okay. But there was that core dishonesty that I told myself lies all the time, too. And until I got here, I didn't even really know what a lot of them were. But knowing that that sentence applied to me scared the you-know-what out of me. And that's probably what helped me be so willing. Open-mindedness. You know, I thought I was open-minded. And I was open-minded to a point. And what I got to learn by being here was how to be open-minded way beyond that. to see the similarities when I thought there were none, to allow myself to open my heart and be touched by somebody whose circumstances might have been completely, completely different than mine. And those weren't things I knew how to do when I got here. I was really good when I got here at using my brain to get information. And so that's what I did when I first came. I read the big book in like a day and a half. I'm like, okay, great. What's the next one? Can I take the test? I'm ready to move on. I did have to ask, who the hell was John Barleycorn? I had no idea. Somebody told me, like, who is that? Like, wow, this thing is written in a little bit old-fashioned way. Can't we, like, modernize it a bit? So you get the sense of who I was at 27. I think it was my first year in OA when I first started participating in the birthday party play. And I think that's where I met you first, Tony. And for several years, I mean, that was where I felt most connected and most a part of. And that, too, was part of, for me, the action that has allowed me to stay here all these years and find a level of comfort in my own skin. When I got here, I used to describe my life as, you know those rock climbers that are just amazing and they're like climbing backwards over those like caverns and somehow they're like, you know, spiders or something. They're able to stick upside down. That was how I had been living, kind of like this, like every part of me was tense. Every part of me was trying as hard as I could just to hang on. Meanwhile, I was doing like a real shuffle off to Buffalo to keep you guys amused and to make sure that I could like control everything. And that was whether I was binging, purging, compulsively exercising, starving, you name it. If it can be done with food for the most part, other than those few things that I heard about when I got here, I've done it. And I can eat like a 500-pounder because I gained 60 pounds in a month once. And I know what that crazy head is like, even though because I had so many different compulsive behaviors, my actual body went, you know, so far up and so far down, because I had 25 tools I could use, not just food. I think I'll do a brief, what it used to be like, what happened, and what's like now for the people who don't know me, just to give you a context. Because in a sense, the action that for me is the willingness, that for me is spirituality, comes from that journey. So I grew up in a family, like I said, that looked really good on the outside. It was the professor dad and the mom and the three girls wearing matching dresses that we actually liked, so it was okay. Mom was a really good seamstress. And from a very young age, I knew that I was defective. I'd been born with a cleft lip and palate. It was fixed with two surgeries when I was less than 2 years old, so I don't have conscious memories of those things. And then I didn't really have serious speech problems. I didn't have any other problems. So it was kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's done. But what I knew, and I knew it more once I hit about 8, when kids start making fun of people a lot, that God, whatever I thought that was at the time, hated me because I'd been born with this obvious defect. That was what it was called. And so really there was nothing I could do to make up for that. And no matter how good I was at all the things I was actually good at, it didn't matter. I couldn't even get to zero. And so I would never be adequate. And yet I didn't really have the words to talk about this, nor did I even know that I could or should. And because I was good at doing lots of stuff, and because in my family outsides were important and insides weren't really discussed, there wasn't really any outlet. So like many of you with different stories, the steam in the kettle with no hole to go out just kept building. And I threw that into compulsively achieving things. and was very, very active. I loved sugar. And I remember at 6 asking my mom, could we just have icing cake? Because who wanted to bother with the cake part? We couldn't. She didn't know how to do that. In any case, it never showed. And interestingly, in my family, like, people talked as if they were 500 pounds, but they looked pretty much on the slimmer side of normal. But there was this kind of mental obsession and fascination. And Dad was a chef and blah, blah, blah. And so this thing kind of got stuck in my head, and it later, in puberty, kind of started to blossom. I was still small because I was very, very active. And it was a point of pride that for my mother and I, that in seventh grade I wore a toddler size 6X skirt because my waist has always been small. And I didn't know that was strange. All I knew was that I was defective. I was never going to fit in. I was never going to be okay. And there was nothing I could do about it. So I kind of kept going along like that until I got to college, and that's when starving seemed like a really good idea. And I tried that for a couple years until it didn't work anymore. And then compulsive exercise and binging and starving, laxatives, you know, really fun stuff like that came into my life in my creative thinking way. And it didn't really work very well. But that's what I did for the next 10 years. And meanwhile, I was trapped inside myself, not knowing that I was trapped. So how could I get out? And that kept going on. And I went to school, and I liked school, so I went to school some more. And then I went to move to a different country, and then I moved to another different country, and then I moved to another different country, and you get the idea. Because it kept me so busy. And, you know, you could get new boyfriends in every country, and you could eat new foods in every country, and they didn't know who I really was in that country, so I could move to a different one. And, you know, I was busy. And then, basically, my higher power saw fit that I didn't have to keep living that way anymore. And I crashed. How I crashed was my business partner in another country basically said, you are so obnoxious, I don't want to work with you anymore. He was nicer than that. And a year later, because I couldn't really keep doing my business on my own, I had to move back to America. I had to move back to America where I did not want to live, because then I would have to speak English, and I didn't realize it at the time, but then I would have to be me. If I was living in some other country, speaking some other language, hanging out with other people, I could be someone else. So I had to come back and be me, which was abhorrent. I couldn't imagine anything worse. Speaking English, I couldn't get a job in my field, which was one of those fields that sounds really glamorous if you, you know, don't know what really it's like, for 8 months, so I had to be a waitress. Actually, my hair was about the color of my dress, which I told Tony, like, oh, look, I painted and matched the furniture. At that time, my hair was burgundy, and I was a waitress wearing a burgundy skirt. It was polyester. And I understand that for some people, that would not be pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. But living with my grandfather, because I had no money and owed a lot of money to the bank, riding a moped, being a waitress in a burgundy polyester skirt that matched my hair, and speaking English, for me, I had nowhere else to hide. I had been hiding for all those years from myself as well as from everybody else. And probably I didn't even hide from everybody else that well, but I really hid well from myself. So here I am. And I was so full of self-loathing that I couldn't even hide that from myself anymore. And I hated everyone and everything and myself most of all. And I love, even though I don't know what God is, I think whatever it is has a great sense of humor, and synchronicity to me is one of the hallmarks of God talking to us. And so in this restaurant, which was not like a cool restaurant either, in my burgundy skirt, I would see these ladies come twice a week, and all they would have was tea, and they had the blue book, and blah, blah, blah. And like, okay, I knew a few things. And I had a friend who was in a different program that I had gone to a meeting with once or twice that I didn't think I qualified for, that actually I ended up quite qualifying for, but nonetheless. So I saw those ladies, and then eventually, after a few weeks of them coming in, I asked them, you know, what program they were in, and they told me. And I prepared myself by eating 12 pieces of toast, which of course I was never going to do again, and went to the log cabin at 2 o'clock on some weekday that I wasn't being a server that day. And Roseanne wasn't there, but Doris was there. And many of you know Doris if you've been around quite a while, and she passed away some years ago, but Doris knew my grandmother. And I always wondered what it would have been like if my grandmother had found recovery. Because this grandma was my patron saint. She was the one who, no matter what happened in my house or no matter what happened with my parents and I, she treated me like I was special. And somehow, because of that love and the love of a lot of other people, I was able to keep going on, even when many times I didn't want to and fantasized about not. So I talked to the ladies. I went to the meeting. I cried the whole way through. I don't even know what they said. But somehow I knew I found a place where I could belong. And that was the beginning of this phase of the journey that's been the last 27 years of my life. And it hasn't really been pretty, a lot of it, and it hasn't been fun, a lot of it, but it has been worth every single moment, and there isn't a moment I could take out and say without that I wouldn't be here today, because it took all of that for me to be here today. You know, in the beginning, pretty much all I did besides go to that waitress job was go to meetings. And for me, therapy is another tool. It's not an official tool, but it's my personal tool. Therapy. I needed to share for a lot more than 3 minutes, let me tell you. like 3 hours a week was pretty much the minimum. And I needed every minute of all of that. And you guys were kind. And I heard other people saying things that I could relate to, even if your circumstances were different. And other people talk about feeling defective and feeling like they would never fit in, and having the same kind of head that I did, or talking about the insides and outsides not matching. And that just wasn't a language that I grew up with. So I didn't even know what questions to ask. So how could I find the answers? Here, I found them. And in terms of being spiritual, like, that was always a struggle for me, because even though I knew there was something greater than myself, I thought it hated me. And that didn't just go away because I came here and started working a program. But Carol and then my next couple sponsors, until I got to the one that I've had for 24 years, I think, said, as long as you don't think you make the sun rise and set, and you don't make the tides go in and out, you never have to go any farther beyond that. The truth is, I've gone a lot farther. But it's still, for me, quite vague. And the most solid part of it is that I am connected to every one of you. And we are connected to everyone outside this room. And the people here are connected to everyone outside this city, and the planet as a whole, and beyond, and beyond, and beyond. And it doesn't stop. And the more we each become, and the more I become, the more that essence grows. And the more we get to be who we truly are, and not the masks we wear. And to have that feeling is so empowering. I've had a few spiritual awakenings in recovery where I had these moments, not exactly like Bill Wilson in the Big Book, but my version of that. And the one that I remember the most is the one that, again, my God has a great sense of humor. And so I was walking through the old Santa Monica Mall food court. The food court. Like, how not spiritual can you be? It was the old food court, too. So, like, you know, donuts and whatever. You know, all the food court foods. These were not, like, modern hip salad things. And I was walking through probably even, you know, in recovery, and this was probably 15 years ago. You know, maybe not judging all the people harshly, but thinking like, oh, those foods are bad. You know, why are you picking those? You know, my constant little K, you know what, in my head, the station. And all of a sudden, I got this really warm feeling. And I started feeling connected to these people. And I started, like, loving them. I didn't know them. They were buying greasy food. I loved them. And I had this completely top to bottom, in to out, as far as it could go, sense of connection and belonging that to me is the truth. I live in a different world a lot of the time, and it's a lot smaller. But to me, the real truth and the real gift of a program like this is that sometimes, whether it's just in my head or whether I get to have that amazing spiritual moment that lasted for like 4 hours, I will say. And then I was laughing about it because it's like the Santa Monica Mall food court. Like, really? Not the ocean? Not the mountaintop? Not, you know. But how perfect. How perfect that I am one with all of you, and we are all connected. And that, to me, is so opposite of how separate I felt growing up and how isolated and alone. And what happens when I come into rooms like this, and I've been coming here for a long time, is I get to feel that sense of connection, even if it's just a teeny weeny bit compared to that day when it was an overwhelming sensation. I can't say how grateful I am that the promises really have come true. And those are another big part of my personal spiritual journey, because somehow, as skeptic as I was, I always believed that those could be true. And being able to walk through my life not enjoying every moment, but being present in every moment and appreciating every moment, even the ones that are uncomfortable, is a complete miracle. You know, in 27 years, I've gone through some difficult things. But for the past 10 years, even when I've been in the moment of going through those difficult things, I have known that this is a gift. I will learn some amazing things from walking through this, that my feelings, whether they're feelings of grief or anger or whatever they are part of being human, and I can love and embrace them even though I do not enjoy them. To be able to live like that really does mean that I get to live free. And I get to live in connection with that higher power that is so much more than my little mind and so much more than any single thing that can happen to me. I've get to take this recovery with me wherever I go, and it's not that I talk about it all the time. I get to bring this journey with me in my life, whether I'm at work where this journey is kind of applicable, or, you know, going to the bank and being annoyed because they don't have the ATMs like they used to, where I could just put all the checks at once and didn't have to go inside, and being kind to the teller because it's not their fault, instead of being judgmental. And it's a very practical spirituality. Some people are very lofty, and I admire that. And some people have higher powers that actually kind of talk to them or give them clear messages. And other than my food court experience and other experiences like that, I haven't had that, and I'm kind of jealous of people that have that too. But I have my experience, and I have my life experience to look at and see that the fact that I'm standing here and I can say that my insides and outsides match, that I like myself today, that the scar on my lip is about maybe an inch or so, and that's about how much weight, pun intended, that experience of having a cleft lip and palate and growing up with those things, that's about how much weight it takes up in my life, is about an inch. And it is a part of me, and if it applies to anything I might need to be talking about or anything anybody wants to ask me about, I'm happy to discuss it. But it's not me. Me is my body, my mind, you, and beyond and beyond and beyond. And if I can stay in the moment and in my skin, or as my first sponsor said, stay in your underwear. Where's your underwear? Stay in it. Like, if I can stay right here, right now, things are fine. And fine in a good way. That I'm whole. That I'm glad to be a human on Earth. That has not always been the case. And when I get to Tracy Land, which many of you have heard me talk about, when I think I live in Tracy Land, that's when I'm in trouble, because that's actually not where I'm living. And if I think human beings should be different than they are, like there is a perfect, as if, well, maybe in Tracy Land there's a perfect, but on Earth as a human, I don't believe that exists. I used to like to say that I'm pretty sure the Dalai Lama and Mother Teresa had a bad day. They might have even thought something mean about somebody, as well as other spiritual leaders. And so who am I to think that anything is wrong? I can go towards the light, and that has been my journey here. Lighter in body, lighter in spirit, and lighter in that I'm able to give more because there's less crud that I'm pulling behind me. And letting go of the crud is hard, and I'm still letting go of more. The longer I go on this journey, the more things I get to discover. The difference between then and now is I relish the discovery, even if it's uncomfortable, because then I get to learn something new. And I get to let go of something else, which allows me to have just that much more energy to go on to, you know, the next thing, or share the next message with the next person who crosses my path. So in closing, I'd like to thank all of you for being here today, and I'll leave you with one quote that I really love, that is a necklace that my husband gave me. And it's a quote from Rumi. And to me, this is also about my higher power. A mountain holds an echo deep inside itself. That's where I hear your voice. Thank you.